This is a Sam Wong copy paste.
Oh, wow.
Except the
So he's kind of like a one-man publishing team.
He's a dynamo. He's a trained engineer. Hmm. Worked his whole career for the Department of Defense.
Oh, wow. Kind of just for his own, out of his own interest, he did this as well, the Wallach anniversary, or was it for a special event, or like 30th anniversary?
I am not exactly sure
what this is great.
Got him to pull that together. I could ask him. But he's definitely one person that he's one of the guys that I would say you got to talk to. Him, Arping Lee, and some guys that are, you know, of their age, so that you can get some of the oral history, and they probably also have documents that I don't have. And I will also reach out to my aunt and other relatives. I think my aunt in San Francisco probably has some relevant information. You guys.
Yeah, that would be amazing. We really appreciate it.
I know Penny Lee, when she did her CYC Experience documentary, did a lot of this too, but more from, you know, how it affects CYC and, you know, it's a part of history.
And how was she connected to CYC, or how did it come to
be? She's connected.
She
married Jack Lee, who's been playing CYC his whole life, line dance, volleyball, basketball. But it's his dad, Gong Seng Gong, is the guy that went around with the van.
Okay.
But Penny Lee's great grandmom owned Chin's Restaurant on Connecticut Avenue, and her brother is one of my teammates. And her kids are very active also. It seems they're young adults here, 25, 30, 30 years old. But she was actually Miss Chinatown back in like 1980.
Wow.
She was Miss Chinatown. They do that every year.
Yeah, we saw some of the early ones from like the 70s, 60s.
She used to, she has footage of it too. Back when the parade was a much smaller thing, back in the 70s, her and Victor would pause the lion dance stuff, and they'd be the kids out there doing the kung fu you know, stuff.
Oh, wow.
So there's footage of that stuff too. But she's almost a historian herself, you know, in making films about Chinatown, and she's the current secretary of CYC. You know, her whole family on both sides are CYC and Chinatown. So she's very good. You've met her. You haven't met her?
We actually have not met, but we're hosting a screening of April 1968.
Oh, you are?
In a few weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, actually, I may have a flyer for that, if just in case.
Is it going to be at the Anacostia location?
It is, and so we're doing with Ted and the 1882 Foundation. So we're going to have a shuttle. So, no, we have not met Penny, yeah. But
you need to meet her.
Yeah.
So there's some older people that you need to meet. I need to put you in front of CCBA when we gather with all the other older people. I'm trying to think how the Republic of China and TECRO, the Taiwanese Economic and Cultural Representative's Office, might be involved. I know they revere Art Ping Lee. You know, they have dinners for that guy every now and then, just to make sure he knows and the community knows his importance in the role of helping Kuomintang and you know, ROC back in the days of World War II, etc. You definitely need to talk to Art Ping Lee. You know, I think his English is good enough. You don't need translator. And the Wong brothers from Chinese Community Church, because they've been here a long time, 70 some years. And if I think of any others, I will let you know. But I'm going to go through the documents that you've photocopied and see who they're referring to, and maybe I know their grandson or something. And just help be a connector.
That would be amazing. We really appreciate it.
I think this is important work. You guys are doing important work, and if I can help, I want to help.
We can't thank you enough, even for just agreeing to, you know, sit down with us and share some of that rich history and whatever way you're able to connect would just be amazing. These are obviously just a tiny, tiny sampling of some of the documents we have, but I just wanted to bring some, especially ones that reference your grandfather, just to be able to give you a sense of. That one actually does not reference your grandfather, but
Charles Sewell.
School of the mayor.
Yeah. Chinatown. That was 1938. Oh, Congressional Cemetery. So one of my grandfather, Frank Fong's good friends, was King Lai Yi, last name Yi. And some people describe it as, you know, Frank Fong and King Lai Yi ran Chinatown. King Lai Yi is my godfather's dad. So in Chinese they have a Kai Daddy, Kai Mama, you know, Kai Ma, Kai Dad. Anyway, he ran Casino Royale. And that was the, not just Chinese run, it was the spot for big bands and huge parties in the 30s and 40s. So politicals, you know, I mean, the glitterati of the day would have their parties and functions and meals and, you know, be there to be seen and be seen. Casino Royale was the place. He owned that the same time my grandfather ran the Republic restaurant. When Yi Gen Lai's son, who's my godfather, came over from Hong Kong, brought his family, there's a big newspaper article about the son of the Casino Royale owner arrives in Washington. My grandfather was there to welcome them, and, you know, like four or five kids are standing on the steps to the train at Union Station, and there it is. I thought we had a copy of that article, but the Yi family, you know, there are many families that were kind of the pillars of the community way back then, and you know, a lot of them are in that Chinese directory. I just thought I'd mention Casino Royale and the owner of that place.
Do you happen to remember what newspaper that article appeared in? Was it like the Post or the Evening Star?
I'm sorry, I don't know.
No, it's okay. I'm just curious in case.
Yeah.
We can probably track it down.
And if it's if it's my mom's place, I'll make a copy of it for you.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, we'll see if we can track it
down. Yeah, and I'm just thinking back some of the old articles that were kept and where they might be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's any of my siblings have kept that stuff, but, you know, so some of the stuff I have is from my mom's place. And, you know, she's like, oh, yeah, you keep it. But if I'm able to get over there, she just lives here in Bethesda. I will try to grab that stuff, you know. But I think Sam Wong could help you on the and Arping Lee on the Onleon building documents. The president of Onleon right now is Wayman Lee, and he's also regularly at the CCBA meetings. You know, we're very good friends. I just helped him out with getting the Onleon, you know, national convention.
Oh yeah.
Done, you know, with the hotels and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in the hotel industry.
Okay.
And so they always come to me to help them negotiate hotel deals. That building was sold out by some of the leadership of Onleon, much to the chagrin of many of the elders. And so that's what I think is fueling some of the desire to get a youth movement in place that has sort of roots or loyalty
in a sense of history,
so that there won't be any future sell-off of a very important building like the Onleon Merchant.
So 618, 620 is no longer owned by... I actually didn't know that.
Nope.
Who's the owner? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But some group got into power at Onleon and sold it. And now Onleon has a building on the same block, but not that historic, you know, building with its facade, you know. And, you know, it's one of the few buildings that stand out like that. And it's no longer on balance.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, and I'm not sure if it was a shady deal or not, but long and short, it was sold out. It was sold to someone else or entity. And it's no longer controlled by Onleon.
Who will try to trace that?
Yeah, you can take a look at probably the public records of who bought it.
Yeah, the deed.
And it was just recently, I think, you know, past 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that, at least again, from what we're able to find, it was the first building in Washington, D.C. to feature Chinese style facade. And I mean, you know, based on these permits and whatever that, and I know there's a plaque there now that at the entrance.
Oh, there's a plaque there.
That says something to that effect. And that's, it's now Chinatown Garden, I think.
Yeah, that's, they're probably just the tenant. But it's sad to see, you know, iconic buildings like that kind of just fall through your hands, you know. You know, like the buildings that our family owns, you know, you know, from back in the day that our grandfathers lived and worked at, we would never sell. You know, we have a rental house in Chevy Chase or Silver Spring. But yeah, up, you know, that, you know, that can be sold. But if it's, you know, like my Gung Gung's restaurant in Addisbury, you know, kind of never sell that, so that we can show my grandkids what their great grandfather, there's how, where he made a living, there's where he rested his head, you know. And so we keep iconic things like that too. So my grandfather, my mom actually distributed some of our grandparents' items to me and my brothers and sisters. And they gave me my Gung Gung's what they call poor man's pillow.
Hmm.
It's a little box looking thing. It's sort of scalloped and sloped. You know, it's a pillow.
Hmm.
But it's hard.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know. And so I got it downstairs.
Hmm.
They gave my brother his abacus. You know, abacus. It looks like a bunch of beads on you know, that's how they used to
calculate.
The old Chinese calculator. and so growing up, he would actually do his paperwork and stuff, just, you know, his little desk, and just, and you're just like, what the heck is going on there? You know, just a lot of clicks and, you know, but that's how they calculated larger sums, you know.
And that works very well.
Yeah. Did you learn that?
Yes.
Yeah. As a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
In math in China?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and we have some of his old restaurant stuff, like his, I got his ice block carrier.
Oh, really?
It's like, you know, iron. You never see iron like that anymore, right? But, you know, back then they didn't have electricity and refrigeration like we know.
Mm.
So they just have a box and they get a big, huge chunk of ice, put it on top, and that coolness went down, and that's where you kept your cold. So I have his, you know, irons that, I have his meat grinder. So this is stuff that's probably 100 years old.
Oh, wow.
So I have his meat grinder where he would take chunks of meat, like beef, and make it into a hamburger.
Wow.
And there's probably a lot more of that stuff in my mom's storage area. You know, those kind of things are kind of held on. I know we used to have my grandfather's, both of them, their restaurant menus. I haven't seen them in probably 20 years.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. But, yeah, it probably didn't resonate with me to just, oh, it's in front of me, I should hold on to it right now. But it's probably still stored away.
Mm.
Hopefully I can, you know, get my hands on that stuff still.
Well, I'm curious what the specialties were that were cooked at the carryout place that you worked at. Or that.
So it was a principally a carryout, but we had Chinese American food.
Mm.
So they had shrimp fried rice, pepper steak, egg foo young, more of the Americanized Chinese food. They didn't have roast duck or roast pig. They didn't have you know, very, 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 very native dishes. They had the Americanized food. They had chop suey chow mein, egg rolls, you know. And those were that's what I learned to cook when I was 7, 8 years old. But they also had the whole carry out, you know, fried chicken, sub sandwiches, bacon, lettuce, tomato, you know, BLTs, and, you know, crab cake sandwiches, and they did not have what you see in a lot of Chinese American carryouts now, mambo wings.
Oh.
They didn't have that stuff yet.
Mm.
So no mambo wings, but they had all the other stuff. So it was Chinese American food, and in pictures of my grandfather's carryout in Adams Morgan, you can see, you know, Chinese American food. And they might have like a couple of the, you know, they had spare ribs, Chinese style spare ribs, pork yakabane, and I was speaking to the guy that was doing the Chinese restaurant stuff, and I mentioned to him that, you know, just as a side curiosity, there are certain dishes that African Americans gravitate to, and it's not just recently. It's for generations. And it is the, and it's like 4 or 5 dishes. Pork yakimeng, shrimp fried rice, pepper steak, egg foo young. Those 4 dishes, if you ask a black American of just about any age, what's one or two of your favorite Chinese dishes? I would say 90% of the time you will hit one of those 4. And I mentioned that to the guy, and he's like, well, yeah, I think there's, but he said he wasn't gonna go that direction, you know, because it was just too difficult a space to traverse, you know. I'm like, but dude, that is a phenomenon. You know, and then you go across the bridge, you know, to white America, and it's a very different set of dishes that they'll tell you. They'll tell you Kung Pao chicken, right? They'll tell you General So's chicken, mushy pork, but they will not say shrimp fried rice. But if you go into a ghetto Chinese restaurant, carry out, which is what my grandfather ran, it was ghetto. That's, you know, 90% of the dishes we made in, on the Chinese side were those four dishes.
And the clientele was mostly African American.
Yes, almost exclusively. Once in a while, there'd be an Anglo that stumbled in. No Chinese would eat there.
and what
except us.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is what did you and your family eat when you guys ate there?
Yeah,
you would
know,
you eat things that you made for the customers, or would you, or would
no,
you make
we
things
had,
that
we had real down home toisan food. We had bean thread soup, like fuzhou. We had black mushrooms and chicken. We had we had pig's feet with vinegar, right? You know, steamed fish, you know, roast pork, noodles. So, you know, some of the noodles, some of the stuff did creep over to the menu that we served to our patrons. But for the most part, when dinner was made, it was not stuff coming off the menu. It was real Chinese food that my grandmother would have cooked in China, in Tuaisan. And so we grew up eating food that onukbiang, which is a sort of pork, mashed pork with black mushrooms and water chestnuts steamed. You know, comfort food. Salted fish, salted shrimp. You know, so it was like poor man's food. Okay, but that was what my grandparents grew up with. And that's what they made, and that was, you know, and then once in a while they'd make, seasonally they'd make zhongzi, you know, glutinous rice with meats and peanuts and different things, wrapped in, was it banana leaves? Is it banana leaf? Some kind of big leaf.
Yeah.
They roll it into the leaf and then they string it up and tie it up and they boil this big batch of it. Anyway. Those were the foods that we grew up eating. So they, I would say that was Toisan village food. Yeah. So none of the General Tso's chicken, mushy pork. I mean, I didn't even know about that stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But the cool thing about our restaurant is we also had a jukebox.
Oh really?
You know, with and that was the time of the Beatles. We didn't have the Beatles in our jukebox. We had mostly Motown. You know, we had mostly black singers, you know, in our jukebox. And that's what, because that's what our patrons, you know, wanted. And sure enough, there, and I think I have some of the 45s.
Oh, really?
That, yeah, like Smokey Robinson, The Miracles, you know, the OJs, just all those 50s and 60s iconic groups. Yeah, they made
and so
those.
It was like a nickel you drop in and
yeah,
you can
nickel,
pick your song.
A nickel and you get your song. It might even be the last honor. But yeah, and then we had pinball machines, you know, and a big counter. So it was mostly carry out, but if you wanted to, you could pull up a stool and you know, eat. But yeah, most of our customers were African Americans.
And how long, when did it close down and why?
72 or 73. My grandfather fell ill in the hospital and died in the hospital, you know, after, you know, fading for a couple of months. It was actually Georgetown University Hospital. I think I was in 7th or 8th grade because I used to walk over to the restaurant and pick up my grandmom or grab my grandmom and take a taxi down to help usher her to the hospital. She'd stay there the whole day And I went to Gordon Junior High School, which is right there by the Safeway off of Wisconsin Avenue, just mm-hmm. north of Georgetown. And I'd do my day of school, and then I'd walk down to the hospital, you know, say hi to my grandfather, help feed him dinner, and then usher my grandma home.
And so at that time, the restaurant...
It was a shutdown. It was because, a shutdown. It was my grandfather, my grandma, and my mom running it.
Mm.
So my grandparents were at the hospital all day,
mm.
and my mom couldn't run the whole thing because my dad worked for the labor department and HUD
mm.
for his civil service career. And so he was away during the day, and you know, my mom had to take care of us. She couldn't run the restaurant too, so it was just shut down.
Mm. And was it not an... Was it rented out after that fact or not?
After that, it wasn't rented out for a while. I think maybe a year after my grandma passed away, a year or two after my grandfather.
Mm.
So that whole time it was just shuttered.
Mm.
And then after my grandma passed away, my dad was renting it out for the family. And then he started to fall ill. He passed away in 88, so maybe for 10 years he was running it out. But then for a few years there, it was neglected. And there were homeless people in there. We were still in high school. And then when I got to college, I inherited the management of that building, you know, got it cleaned up and put in tenants. And we had a few tenants, and then we stumbled upon Julia's Empanada. I've been there for 20-some years. Yeah. But I do manage my wife's side of the family's real estate, too.
Oh, really?
And, you know, so her grandfather had a laundry on 14th Street. And I just took that over this past year. But funny story there is the manager at the Times is a white guy, ex-Marine, tough dude. Managed it for about 15, 20 years.
As a laundromat.
No.
Oh.
The building.
Oh, the building.
Units up,
oh, okay.
Plus the commercial stuff. And when he turned the building over to me, he gave me this big ring of keys and a bulletproof vest, which I still have there. And I'm like, why you have a bulletproof vest? Right? And it's too small for me anyway. But he's like, dude. And he gives me the history of the building. That when he took it over, it was drugs, prostitutes, shots two or three times a week. And they're not shots. Bang, bang, shots that you hear right there. So 14th Street has undergone a relatively recent gentrification. You know, now, I mean, it's you go there a Friday, Saturday night, it's people just lying outside the door trying to get into there. You know, spend $75 for a steak.
Yeah.
You know, it's just crazy. And but it's gentrified now. You know, it went from Adams Morgan to U Street, now 14th, and that whole area is just, you know, not many African Americans live there anymore. Whereas it was all black back in the 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, even early 90s. And this recent 10-year time window has just changed. And, you know, the property value is just skyrocketing. You know, and, but, you know, that was an old family property. And, you know, those will never be sold.
Wow, that's... every place is, like, full of history and stories and...
Yeah, and you know, it is, you know, getting into a conversation with some of these folks like me, whose families, you know, used to own property here or whatever, or maybe they still do, but they're not living there or they're not running their businesses out of there. That can give you, you know, that primary recollection of what used to happen here.
Do you all have any photos of the storefront?
Oh,
of your carry out?
Yeah. I mean, they're mostly at my mom's, but I know I have this. This is a real bit. Sister made these a few years ago. That's our family. So that's me looking up at the clouds.
Oh, wow.
My grandfather, my grandma, my mom, my dad, and then the four siblings.
Serving Adams Morgan since 1955. So Bing's Carryout had been there since 1955?
Yes, Bing's Carryout has been there since 1955. My grandfather's other restaurant in this book, the 50s directory, was at a different location. Hmm. That was the one down in Southwest.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So your other grandfather or this grandfather had a previous restaurant that was in Southwest?
This grandfather, my mom's dad, the one I knew, had a restaurant in Southwest.
Huh.
I believe it was Southwest.
So that was prior to 1955?
Prior to 55. In 1950 he had it there, because it's in the book.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the history of the Republic Restaurant.
Hmm.
But what I do know of it, and there's a story in here, is that it was a white tablecloth restaurant. And it served Chinese food, but it was more upscale, catered to office workers and diplomats.
Mm-hmm.
And so the story in here talks about grandfather, my dad's famous turtle soup that Pentagon generals would entertain foreign generals that came to D.C. to negotiate during World War II, whatever. They'd take him to the Republic restaurant to have this famous turtle soup. And I think my mom has an article from back in the day about that too, but somehow that's a story that
has survived.
History
of
Chinatown book. Yeah, turtle soup. You know. So I never knew, but we used to go clubbing right across the street from where my grandfather's restaurant was. We used to go to this club called the Fifth Column on F Street between 9th and 10th Street.
Hmm.
And his restaurant was right across the street from that club. And I just pointed, oh, yeah, my grandfather's restaurant used to be right there.
Huh.
But it was, blacks were not allowed into the restaurant.
Oh, wow.
It was, it was a segregated city.
Yeah.
And institutions back then, white tablecloth and whites only.
Huh. But Chinese patrons as well.
Chinese were considered white.
Hmm.
They were not, so if you were black, you're black.
Hmm.
You know, and there's always been sort of a fence straddling thing with Chinese in America, except during exclusionary period. Where, you're targeted. Hmm. But like even my dad used to come home and say, yeah, I'm friends with the secretaries who were mostly blacks in the government offices, but the GM, the bosses would always come to me and ask me what's going on, and so he had relationships with the primarily white management side and the primarily black operational and secretaries. And I think the same thing happened, his friends on the operational level would trust him with the stories about, I cannot stand this guy, he did this, and then the white bosses would do the same, trust him with the same thing. I'm like, man, that's very curious. It's odd that the whites see Chinese as them, and the blacks see Chinese as them. Well, you're not white, you're one of us. Well, you're not black, you're one of us. So it was curious, as far as a racial dynamic, it was just a little odd to me that you could kind of straddle that fence.
Both worlds, yeah.
Straddle that.
Well, thank you really so much for taking the time.
Yeah,
and
my
I mean,
pleasure.
This is like we're overwhelmed by this just wealth of history and information, and yeah, we just thank you so much for doing this.
Did you want to take any of these documents, these books with you, or?
We would, if that would be okay, maybe a couple.
Sure.
If we could borrow a couple.
Sure. Probably the ones that you're interested in here on the volleyball side are the ones that, like, DC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you want the Boston ones. I don't know. What's this? Oh, Wallach. Boston. Maybe I can find another DC one for you. Boston. Mm-hmm. DC Dragon Boat. That's DC. Yeah. I mean, it's formulaic. You know, they get all the politicians' letters and some pictures of the teams and whatever. Okay, and then on this side. Oh, I just brought this out. This is my dad. He was in the Korean War. And they used to do these yearbooks, 1953. So he was like 20 years old, 19, 20 years old.
Oh, wow.
You know, but if you look. Every other person there, white guy. You know, yeah. Once in a while, you see a black face.
Was he deployed abroad?
He was in Germany during the Korean War.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but he did his military service before college.
Before college, okay.
So back then, if you were wealthier, from wealthier family, from a Silver Spoon, you go to college first. So you do your service as a captain, lieutenant. So he did his service as a grunt, as a private.
Mm.
But they enacted the GI Bill, and so he went to GW, and the government paid for his college education.
Mm.
You know, but that's just a little side note about the history. You know,
yeah.
Mm. Okay, so
I'm interested in
this. Okay. So here's the stack. This one. Yes? Oh, you don't need it. Okay. So Sam Wong has, you know, he wants everything to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really one of the reasons and drives behind him doing some of these books. I don't know what the number of books he publishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he might do 50 of these, but invariably he prints one and I get one.
Mm.
But yeah.
Actually, I think
the Wallach one?
Yeah. And maybe just one of the DC ones. I don't want to borrow too much of
Is this guy on the, like, this year's celebration of New Year in the Chinatown
Yes, I think that's the guy.
Okay.
I think
because
so.
His face is working.
Yeah. But if you go out, if you do have an opportunity, you know, and meet Sam Wong at his house, I've been there a couple of times. It's a treasure trove of stuff, you know. I mean, I'm kind of a young collector, if you want to call it that.
Mm.
I think this is, this is his place.
Oh, wow.
But this is just a sample of the stuff that he's collected and got. Okay, so you got the ones that you want? Okay, so if you just protect them for me.
No, absolutely.
Just make sure I. Oh, here's some pictures. So this is the restaurant.
Oh, wow.
So this is inside. It's a nearby park, Calarum Park.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Leave those in there if you want.
Great, thank you.
And I'll hold on to the Xerox pages and go through these. And is this a, do you need to RSVP on this?
No.
So, you know, I'm going to have CYC put this up on their Facebook. And website?
That would be wonderful. Thank you. Yeah,
okay.
I can send you a PDF.
Oh, that'd be great. You can email me that. That'd be super. And because, I mean, we're trying to get more involvement and do cultural stuff and stuff that, you know, is important to our community. And this definitely, a lot of people need to see this.
Well, there's going to be a panel discussion afterwards.
Oh.
Penny, so Penny's going to be on the panel.
She's on the panel too. Okay, cool.
And I think Easton Law is going to moderate the panel. And so it's kind of going to be, film screening and then discussion afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, I'll send you a PDF from then. Here's some more photocopy pages.
So this is going to be, what day of the weekend?
Saturday, May 21st.
Okay.
And it actually starts at 11:30. It's from 11:30 to 1:30. The shuttle's going to leave from in front of the Chinese Community Church at 10:30.
Okay.
And actually, this so happens that the same right afterwards is going to be a performance by the Helen Sung Trio. They're coming from
that
New York.
That is a bonus.
Wow.
And
what do they perform?
A piano.
Piano?
No, jazz.
Jazz. Yeah.
Cool.
So.
All our kids are into music.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they all play piano, but then, including my niece is also a violinist. My nephew plays cello, and then my boys are wind instruments: brass, trumpet, and I can't remember what else. And my daughter plays a little violin. But they have a group called Songs for Seniors, and they perform for elderly homes.
Oh, wow.
And they perform
nice
at Wildlife House.
Oh, really?
And it's a great kind of synergy.
Yeah.
Youth
connecting with the
old.
Yeah.
And those elderly really love it.
I'm sure. Because
they see young kids.
Yeah.
They're very good performers. Mm-hmm. And afterwards they serve a little cookie or cake to the elders, and they chat with them, and I think it helps our kids get a primary exposure to octogenarians that are not related to them.
Right.
You know,
right.
90-year-old, and they're in wheelchairs. Some of them look very decrepit, but you know, there's a heart in every one of them, and the kids connect to them, and I think
probably
it helps.
Vice versa, they probably are energized and
I think it's very synergistic, and it is even good for the parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just our kids; there's a whole group of them, but the parents get a lot of it too because they can
see
that the humanity, the seeds of the humanity and compassion just emanate from it, and the music is just the way that it gets conveyed, and having those events. So they do a dozen events a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's such a nice, that kind of intergenerational exchange is such an important not often enough kind of practice thing. So that's actually a really wonderful.
Okay. Well, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And
we will be in further touch as I start thinking about who might help you and might be good to meet.
And before I forget, this is paperwork that we have to do for the oral history.
And I'm just curious about the all your paintings. Well, you got them.
These are from the night market in Hong Kong. So took the family to China and Hong Kong in 2007, just before the Olympics in China, and that's where these three came from. We shipped the paintings over just the canvas, and we got them framed here.
They're beautiful.
Nice.
It really does capture the essence of some of the China. I mean, they take it back 100 years, but you could still see the essence. And when I see these pictures, I can still smell the aromas from the street vendors and the foods that come out, and the hustle and bustle. So it really did kind of give us a good snapshot, but not the traditional picture, in an artist's rendering.
And they seem alive, they capture
Yeah.
Like
a sense of a
and I mean, you know, we're not art snobs,
yeah.
But these guys that we bought, you know, we talked to some of our friends, and yeah, these guys are some of the better painters of street scenes.
Mm.
Yeah, this stuff is just stuff that I do junk art, so I collect junk from like house renovations and stuff.
Yeah.
And once in a while we have a little art opening or exhibit, and you know, people can buy these pieces, and I donate money from the sale of these to CYC, So Others Might Eat, and the Red Cross.
Oh, wow.
So probably have about 30, 40 pieces up on this level.
And how did you get into art, or you know, wanting to do that kind of?
I do a lot of the work at some of the buildings that we manage, right? Mm. But so I have tools, and I've got a very crazy workshop out in my garage. But I was just goofing around and had a piece of board, and I just screw this in, attach this, and it was like a gift to my wife. That was my very, very first piece. And it was more just fun, you know. But then my sister-in-law saw that. She goes, "Hey, could you do the same thing to this 100-year-old wooden shutter that we just purchased at some farm out in Leesburg?" And I looked at the shutter, and it was this tall, you know, 8-foot-long shutter with a floral cutout. I'm like, that's very cool. So I took a bunch of old tools and implements and created flowers, butterflies from old rusted hinge. Those are the wings. And they use it as their mudroom coat rack.
Huh.
Yeah. And I assembled a whole bunch of these old wire coat hangers that you see in old closets that were, you know, painted over 10 times and, you know, probably 100 years old. And I you know, used that, and I distressed the shutter even more than it was distressed.
Huh.
And they loved the piece. And I'm like, you should do this because we pay, you know, $500. Yeah. I'm like, really? You pay $500? I'll give you 50% off. It's just $250. So, you know, I started making a bunch.
Mm.
And they're like, "We'll promote your art opening." I'm like, "Art opening? I'm not an artist. I'm a business guy." You know? But I made about 25 or 30 and hung them up here.
Mm.
And my brother Bo said, "You know, I'm just going to invite some people from my PTA. You know, I'll show them pictures of," because people ask him, "Who did this for you?" You know, they come to his house. He was PTA president or something. Mm. Anyway, he filled my house with all these people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so we had some wine. And I sold $1,800 worth of pieces in like an hour and a half. I'm like, what? People are buying junk. You know, 150 here, 20. That's why you'll see like a little price tag on it, you know, once, you know. And I'm like, wow, it was one afternoon. Well, it took more than one afternoon to do it. But I'm like, wow, you know, it's fun, relieve stress, saving the landfills a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, CYC and So Others Might Eat and Red Cross get a little check. And I'm like, man, this is fun, you know. And I started, like, maybe 5-6 years ago. And it gave me an opportunity to show my kids how to use certain tools. You know, here's how a drill works. Or here's how you seat it. Here's how a screw, you know, the difference between a screw and a bolt. And so I'm like, oh, this is win.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's how I got into doing this stuff.
It's actually really nice. It's And did you do that piece as well?
Yeah. So these are, so my niece is really into violin. She's been to Carnegie Hall 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And one of my college friends was throwing away a bunch of old violins. I'm like, oh, I'll take them off. And I just pulled the piece and get off, and, you know, these are the hooks. And the backboard is from a renovated house. And I'm like, you know, you can't distress stuff to look like that. So I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna use that. And you know, so there's another violin piece there, old window from an old house.
That's these are some great pieces. I mean,
you know, it's fun.
I have talent.
And as a kid, we played a lot of baseball and whatnot, and this, I'm not selling that piece, because that baseball bat, we used to be when we were little kids. And we get those during bat day from the original Washington Senators games.
Oh, wow.
And so I can't believe we still had one of these bats, you know, 50 years ago. And so I'm like, you know, I'm going to make sure we, you know, keep that. You know, these are just kind of fun. These are boards from my kid's karate. Hmm. And I just took, I don't know what it was, but TR or something. Anyway, I stenciled it and used some old hardware. You know, funky pieces. I'm a Maryland Terrapin, so some of my pieces will have little turtles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This one is a little humorous piece. Little dropping.
Nice little detail.
Yeah, so, you know, I've had a couple of, I guess you call them art exhibitions in Baltimore.
You know,
and my wife's like, man, where are you going to put all these? Because I've made probably 100.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I think that it sold about 60, so I guess we still have like 50 of these. And an art exhibition in a while. But, you know, they're fun for me to make, and they help a couple of charities, they fill our walls a little bit. This is actually one of my favorite pieces. I took an old desk drawer.
Oh, wow.
A really old desk drawer. And I repurposed it as my umbrella stand.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it took some old pieces and crafted them into umbrellas.
That's
different.
Very nice.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You should be
impressed. Multi-talented.
I like to keep doing that. You need me to sign something?
Yeah, sign it. I need signature, date, address.
Okay.
And number.
Okay. Five, four, eight, four.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right.